Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Welcome back to The Psychology of Work, everyone. I'm so excited to be here. I'm Dr. Bobbi Wegner, a psychologist, lecturer at Harvard, and founder of Groups. And today we're really digging into a topic that sits right at the intersection of psychology and business, how culture, connection, and leadership behaviors actually drive performance. So my guest today, I'm like particularly excited about for a whole bunch of different reasons. But he is someone who's not only thought deeply about this, but built an entire career proving it. So Mark Malloy is a veteran go-to-market executive who has led sales and operations in some of the fastest-growing HR tech companies, BetterUp, Glint, and now Voz. He's known for building sales organizations that defy the stereotype, high-achieving teams that don't operate through pressure, ego, or super chicken competition, but through cohesion, clarity, and servant leadership. He's advised CEOs, boards, investors, and operators. He has a rare ability to turn complex organizational psychology into practical systems that teams actually adopt. Mark, I'm just so happy that you're here. But before we dive into your frameworks and stories, I would love to just learn more about you. Who are you? Where have you been? What shaped you? Just a bit about who you are as a person.
Awesome. Yeah, great to be here, Bobbi. So I'm a Midwest transplant to Utah by way of Indiana, California, back to Indiana, back to California, over to Tennessee. And then my family and I have been in Utah now for about 13 years. I moved here for a company called Instructure, which is the maker of the software platform Canvas. So for all you teachers and learners out there, you probably use Canvas every day. I remember when we sold our very first Lighthouse account at Instructure. And by Lighthouse, we mean when you win that one account, do other accounts flock and follow? And that was Harvard. So super stoked to be with you today and share a little bit about what I've learned over the years. I've got four kiddos and a lovely wife, Erin, who's a yoga teacher, and she teaches sound bathing. And we're kind of a happy little family here in Utah. I've got two kids in college and then two still at home.
Amazing. So you're really living psychology like at work and at home. Right? You've got like a yoga teacher, sound bather. Now you're got sort of, so it's really interesting because you're coming at it. It seems to me that like, that's the way you see the world is sort of understanding psychology and the complexity of the human experience. And you're really like a super high performing senior sales leader, right? I know you've said that top performance is a derivative of culture. Can you share really a moment in your career where you saw culture directly influence performance in a measurable way? Or what does this even like look like for you? How do you think about this? What comes to mind?
You know, I think some of these stories are best told with real examples.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of think about the constitutional makeup, if you will, of at least in software sales, what we would consider to be a very high performing person. They're generally very kind of alpha oriented. They're pretty aggressive. They're pretty high on conscientiousness. They spike in a lot of these areas. And you know, not that they're deficient in other areas, but you have to be able to understand how to work with that type of human being and what really kind of makes them tick. So I'll just give you a couple of stories. When you really, really want to get the most out of a salesperson, understand what's the most important to them. And a lot of people just default to, well, of course, they're in sales and therefore it's got to be money. Well, for some people, it's that, sure. But for others, it's like status. For others, especially the younger ones, it's, I want my mom and dad to feel proud of me. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give an example. One time we had a younger sales leader, woman, who made President's Club. And this is for the top 10% of performers. And the company was pretty large at that point. We probably had 300 or 400 people in the go-to-market team. And it was a post-IPO company. So it was kind of a big deal when he earned President's Club.
Totally.
And she was still in her 20s. And every time I saw her in the office, maybe not every time, it's probably hyperbole, but at least once a month when I would chit chat with her, she would tell me something about her father. And when we did President's Club that year, rather than me being on stage and handing her the award, I flew her dad out.
Oh my gosh. I just got the chills.
He is the one that presented the award.
Oh my God.
And so when you really kind of understand, like, what is the most important thing to that person in this moment?
Yeah.
Sure, peer recognition is awesome. But just knowing who she was, it was her father. And her father loved her so deeply. I mean, he was a very servant-oriented guy anyway. Mm-hmm. But to see this person who she admires more than anyone else in the world be there for her moment, that's how you juice effort and purpose and inspiration in everyone else that's there. So it's these little ceremonies, I call it earning the right, that earn you the right to ask people to do Herculean things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mind is like, what a beautiful story and what a great leader you are to actually take the time to get to know her and to actually, what I was jumping out to me was like, it seems like you're an expert listener. You know, you can like pick up what the motivations are for the people. To your point, a lot of people assume that the number, the dollars are the thing that's going to be driving the salespeople. But really underneath it, there's, humans are complex. There's lots of thoughts. There's lots of feelings. And so listening to get to the bottom of what the most important thing is going to be the thing that if you can capture, gets the outcomes that you want.
Precisely. And I would just add that for salespeople in particular, it takes a certain type of person, like, that's got a little more brokenness in them.
Yeah.
To do that job.
Like a little trauma hustle.
Right. Like a big chip on your shoulder, oftentimes. Something that you really have to prove in an externally locused way as opposed to internally locused way.
Yeah.
Like there's all these little kind of things that add up to why on earth would any rational, normal human being sign up for a treadmill that never ends? It's quarterly driven.
Yeah.
The metrics that you're measured by are extremely quantifiable. There's no hiding. And it's directly related to your grit, resilience, and effort.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, you know, don't want to be exposed to that because, you know, if you miss your quota a couple quarters in a row, number one, your job's at risk. But then number two, your ego.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like there's a big identity thing. This is out of curiosity. When you look at salespeople that you've hired, you're kind of naming factors or variables that are required, or maybe they're required or maybe they're trends. I don't know. But like, what are the things or the trends that you see in salespeople? How do you, what do you think is really required here?
I think like the main ingredient, it starts with a baseline of what I would just call cognitive agility.
Yeah.
Are they quick enough, et cetera? And then from there, there's two things that I try to measure every single time I'm making a decision to hire or not hire. And it's really will and skill.
Okay.
Does the person have the will and do they have the skill? And by skill, in the back of my mind, I always kind of think to myself, skills are absolutely learnable, trainable, et cetera. And we happen to be expert at growing the skills and capabilities in people. What you can't really train, or at least I've never learned how, is you can move it on the edges through helping people find their personal why and their purpose and, you know, inspire them, help them reach their aspirations. But you really can't baseline improve someone's go-get-it-ness or their effort.
Yeah.
So I try to hire people with just a insatiable motor to learn, be curious. And if they have those two ingredients, then I'm a big believer that we grow the skills, but they also have to have that baseline cognitive agility in order to even, you know, like it doesn't matter how hard you try if you can't grok stuff quickly.
Yeah. If you can't move quickly. And I imagine like this, like relentlessness, like just being in founder-led sales myself, it's like, I never really like planned for that. I just am, you know, and you just got to like, put systems in place to keep showing up and doing the thing. And it's like, ugh.
Exactly. And founders oftentimes fall into this little bit of a little bit. It's not a trap. It's just reality. And the reality is they think oftentimes if you build a great product.
Oh, yeah.
That's the job. Yeah. Well, it turns out that no, actually the job is you have to build a great product and then you have to sell it. And it doesn't matter how great the product is. If you're not dedicating 70% plus of your time to making sure people understand it, the benefit to them, and make that trade-off in their mind, like, I'm going to pay for something. Am I getting more in return from a value perspective? If you don't know how to storytell around that, it makes founding companies very, very hard.
Totally. Yeah. And it's almost like, I love the lean startup model, or just like you go sell it and then build it. Basically, it kind of left flips the order in some way, depending on what you're doing. Not, I feel like operators hate that, or COOs. I was like, wait, what did you commit to? And like, what? I'm like, no, it'll be fine. We'll figure it out. But there's that part of it. Yeah, but then the storytelling part of it's so critical too. And how do you have the flexibility, I guess, to your point, to shape the story, or kind of, you know, how you have your story and what you're selling, but then there's a way. You have to read the room with the person in front of you. Are they getting it? Are they not getting it? Do I have to change my wording? All the things.
Absolutely. And I think there's this really cool thing that happens after you've been doing this for all these years, is you get to build on the shoulders of giants a little bit.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, when I think about the books that have really helped me in my career, you go way back to, you know, maybe some of the Neil Rackham books, like Spin Selling. And then how that progressed more towards some of the Challenger work by, you know, Matt Dixon, Brett Adamson, Challenger Sale, Challenger Customer. And then you begin to combine that with some of the AJ Laffey work on playing to win and the strategic choices cascade. And when you begin to kind of squish some of these concepts together, what you get is a highly personalized and highly tailored system and framework for your company that you can then apply, even though company to company to company, they're totally different. What's really cool is that the baseline stuff is actually not different. It's maybe that last 15% that's different and that you have to tweak. And so the simple pattern matching by building on the shoulders of giants and then bringing a very simple, able to understand framework to your company to get everybody aligned on the same page with your unique worldview. And what is your winning aspiration? And where are you going to play? What's your ICP? What capabilities must you have in order to win? What systems need to be in place in order, you know, and that cascade, my experience is once you get everybody kind of aligned, there's so much speed hidden in clarity.
I want to take a picture of your bookshelf if you get home and have all your books in one stack, like send it to me. But I just know you've put a lot of thought into this, right? You've shown me decks and how you're thinking about culture and teams and like optimizing people within these. And you've been at lots of cool organizations, right? You've been at Chemist, you've been at Glint, you've been Better Up, you're at Vosnail, like all these places. What are some of those things? I mean, I guess you keep bringing them up, but I'm like, I imagine your mind, this is a pretty clear framework or like ingredients that like just exist here, like step one, step two, step three. Is that true? Or do you kind of riff?
It is, but I would say it's different from a CEO lens or a COO, CEO type lens versus a go-to-market lens. And I'll describe the two, because like if you start with maybe the COO, CEO type lens, the primary job is to drive clarity and transparency and communication across the org, right? And you want it to feel like everyone knows exactly how, with no ambiguity, how their work is connected to this broader vision and mission. And in my experience, after reading all management and leadership books, like, you know, in heavily competitive environments, you want to maybe do like more of a Portonian type thing with the four P's. In things that are slightly novel, maybe pull some pages out of Blue Ocean Strategy for how you pursue. And once you kind of grok that, is like, is this a highly competitive market? Is this new thinking? Then who you hire begins to change.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're hiring for Blue Ocean, as an example, you need to hire someone that's got always that cognitive agility layer, but ability to deal with ambiguity, ability to figure things out, ability to get things done without a lot of structure. And, you know, versus maybe these heavily, heavily competitive environments already, like maybe an Oracle or whatever, it's like, oh, and we have a playbook. So you have to have the ability to follow orders. You have to do it exactly this way, because we've known through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tests and iteration that way went. So anyway, my point is from that CEO, COO lens, It's like, okay, if your primary job is to understand what type of market you are, then it's like, okay, how do we help everybody understand how their work is connected to this broader vision and mission to help them drive purpose, you know, and hopefully it's bigger than them. Then your job is to really articulate the strategy super clearly. And I think that my opinion, it's called Playing to Win by AJ Laffey. And I think it's the very best book on this. It's really called The Cascade of Choices. And it's really six things. You know, number one, define your winning aspiration. Number two, define where you're going to play. Number three, define how you're going to win. Four, define what capabilities must you have in order to win. Number five, what management systems. Yeah, it's actually only five choices.
Even better. Keep it simple.
Yeah, even more simple. What management systems need to be in place? And it literally cascades down. Mm. And my experience is when you tell the entire company, it's like, okay, hey, just so we're all clear, this is what we're doing. And by definition, if it's not listed here, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
So strategy is as much about what you're going to do versus what you're not going to do and making that very clear. You know, so we had this mantra at BetterUp, do less to deliver more. And this is a big part of it, meaning like we all know you can find unlimited work in these companies and you're trying to move fast and you're trying to deliver value for customers, but your meta job is actually focus, focus, focus. It's like that warrior monk mentality, you know, 10,000 pounds of pressure behind one point as opposed to spreading that all across. And so if you can get really focused, you can win. And I would say, you know, from there, then you can build a really good sales strategy to really maximize your market opportunity and win your unfair share of that market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to just pick your brain about all this, like just to be like, I need to know all of this. And it's, but I'm thinking, okay, we're in a podcast. I've got to like, think about what else I'll be asking you, yeah. but I'm making, it makes me think, like there's so much parallel between psychology, the way psychologists think, therapists, coaches, and then really good leaders, right? So like if you're building a group for depression or something, right? And you're trying to get people, you got to be very clear about what the group is, what the title is, what are the sub goals? Are you measuring the sort of sub goals of the group? If you're going to put anything down on paper, you better be able to measure it quantitatively and quantitatively, and then have very clear inclusion and exclusion criteria. Who's like in the group, who's not in the group. Same is for teams, right? It's like just a different thing, but it's like, what is the unit? What's your responsibility? What are the goals of it? What are the values? And then who's doing what to get there? And then organizations are basically that at scale. So it's more complex. But humans are humans and there's ways we come together. But I am just listening to you. I'm like, it's the same patterns because it's bringing people together in groups and then figuring out a structure to bind them together and then connect them with some, you've said alignment and very clear goals, like all over the place in group psych world. Clear articulation of goals is everything, right? People are going in different directions if you don't have a very, very clear why. And like, why are we here? Why am I sitting here versus over there?
Exactly. And I think, you know, the real accelerant that I've learned over the years is, and, you know, and I try to do this, try to choose industries that you personally connect with. So it was really easy to inspire vast numbers of people at Instructor, because what you're doing is you're trying to make teaching and learning better for students, and you're driving towards student experience and student outcomes. And the way that you're doing that is you're trying to give professors and K-12 teachers simpler tools to get the tech out of their way so they can be professors and teachers of their content. Like the last thing that you want is to have your teaching software, your learning management system, getting in the way of your pedagogy, any way you look at it, right? And so that was a noble mission. And if you thought that that was important, we could attract some of the very best consumer-based software developers in the world. And as a result of that, we were able to move faster than the rest. And so all of these companies, like that thread, is really important to me to find very, very personal connection to this broader vision, broader mission. Like, do I really believe Because once I really believe, it's been my experience, I can track people like that, that mm-hmm. want to be part of this journey together. And then it becomes very flywheely, if you will, meaning once you start getting success and we see how quickly we're moving, that thing starts really spinning. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure if I've told you that, like, one of the classes I teach is motivation. So what drives human behavior in the workplace? So I'm teaching it now. It's my fifth or sixth year. I don't know, but it's large. It's 220 people. And most people are operators working, you know, a virtual class is global, but it's people trying to figure out how to understand the psychology of motivation to get the best out of their people and teams. And you were talking about the story with the woman on your team who was really connected to her dad. And then you knew that, so you could kind of lean into that and create the environment around her that would really like support that purpose. So when I think about that first in that story, I was like, wow, you're really good at listening and what we teach. So we teach like the theory of motivation. We read a bunch of business books, kind of different disciplines and how they think about motivation. But then we teach a coaching book. It's called Motivational Interviewing. It's not interviewing at all. It's coaching. And it's really, there's a structure, build a relationship, ask open-ended questions, really get clear on what like the problem is you're trying to solve and then come up with a plan. And I can like hear that in the way that you're talking about. Like you seem very coachy. Like I'm thinking you're listening to this woman on your team. You're looking at like what's driving her underneath the surface. And then you're looking for opportunities to connect the business world with her true motivators. And then once you can unlock those two things, that's really where intrinsic motivation lives. But like it puts a lot of responsibility on you as a leader to know how to do that. Most people suck at this, you know, like just asking good questions and trying to unpack. People don't want to touch personal stuff or anything that's perceived personal, like, oh God, your dad, am I really going to ask you? You know, like, not me, I'll dive right into whatever you want to talk about. But most people are like, I don't want to do that. That's not appropriate for work or something.
No, I think there's a lot of magic in authenticity. Number one, like maybe you shouldn't bring, I don't know. I think you should bring your whole self to work within reason, but there's a lot of magic in authenticity. And I'm remembering now that you said motivational interviewing, this is going back a long time, maybe 20 years ago, I read a book about motivational interviewing. And I want to say it was something about a line on outcomes, alternatives considered, and co-create this journey through listening with another human.
I was probably like agenda mapping. It's basically like you put all the things that you could potentially solve together. And then you're like, and to your point, if you solve all of them, you're going nowhere. So like pick the thing you're going to solve. Let's double down on that and get some success.
Yeah.
And then we'll move.
Interesting.
I cut you off though. Sorry.
Oh, no. That's you just described what I was talking about. It was more of like, okay, well, what do we actually want? What problem are we trying to solve in your language, not mine? And then, okay, great. Let's consider some alternatives. And have we thought about this? And have we thought about that? And in the end, how I was trained, at least, is if it's your idea as the manager, that's not great.
It's not going to stick.
It's way better when it's their idea.
Yeah. And then you can guide them. So like from a motivational interviewing, from at least in the context of work, right, versus a straight up coaching environment where you might be more hold up stance of neutrality-ish, like a little bit more at work, there's parameters, right? There's expectations, whatever. But if it's too top-down and directive, you lose a person and they're going to be less connected to what they're doing. It's going to be encoded less deeply. So they're going to get poor outcomes. So you have to your point, kind of guide. So you're like being clear, but you're letting them come to the decision themselves. And then on the other hand, the other extreme of that is like permissive leadership, right? Which is like, you're not giving clear enough feedback. And then your people don't know what their target is, you know, and then you lose people because their behavior is going in like God knows what direction.
Yeah, it's kind of like ruinous empathy and, you know, no one's better off for it. Yeah, so this middle way almost, like if on one end of the spectrum you had, you know, call it type one, autocratic, dictatorial, charge, take the next hill. My job is to manage your energy. I don't trust you. Yeah. I'm going to withhold information because I view it as power.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sprinkle it, you know, and keep you kind of guessing the whole time. On the other end of the spectrum, it's like, hey, let's all be friends and we'll go out and get beers after work. And, you know, I'm going to avoid telling you hard things because I don't want to hurt your feelings and whatever. Right. So anyway, there's different humans need different things along that volume switch, that spectrum. And I think your job as a direct manager or leader of a company is to figure out what works best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you can be kind and deliver tough feedback. So I think, yeah, today's like World Kindness Day.
Oh,
so
it is?
How relevant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Look how on brand, or what's the word I'm thinking of? Not serendipitous, but like, is it chronicity? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. Yeah. In like coaching framework, it would be, yeah, like through strong, build strong relationship. Like you can know the person, have them trust you. Be genuine in your approach, because people can read that from a million miles away if you're not genuine. And then be clear about sort of expectations, figure out what motivates the person, and then align sort of like whatever the goal is, like with what drives a person, and then track the progress, and then have open dialogue around it.
Yeah.
You know, I know we're coming to the end and I feel like we could just go down like the leadership path forever, but I just think what you do is particularly cool and interesting because you lead these like powerhouse sales teams, right? Of these like big organizations. And you've used this idea of like salespeople are often these like super chicken type personalities, and you really do something different when people come in. So like people have been trained in that sort of way and then come to you. And then you've got to get them sort of, so like, tell me about that. Like, what is this super chicken story thing? How do you rewire someone if like, that's who they are, you know?
It's a funny story because you can find so much truth in the animal kingdom. So that's one. When I'm rolling out new quotas.
What animal are you, Mark, is the question.
Yeah, there's so much truth. I'm probably the elephant. That's a different story. I'll tell you why later. But there's also a study on capuchin monkeys that's fascinating as it relates to rolling out new quotas.
Oh, wow.
I could tell you that story a different time. But the super chicken story is there's an evolutionary biologist named William Muir from Purdue. And his big theory was, ooh, I can create a flock of chickens that are what I'm going to define as super chickens. And the definition that he had was the ability to lay high quality eggs quickly. That's what I think a super chicken is. He was focused on egg laying chickens. So he took this giant flock and he separated them into like 9 different smaller flocks. And he sorted the chickens based on those two things, ability to lay high quality eggs quickly. And so he took the most prolific egg layers and put them together, the second most together, the third most together, so forth and so on, all the way to the end, where he had a bunch of random leftover chickens and put them together. And what he thought is, wow, I just figured something out, because you can watch multiple lifespans of chickens pretty quickly because their lifespan's pretty low. After a very short period of time, I'm going to have what I think is going to be the best unlock for the poultry business in the U.S. and therefore the world and so forth and so on. And so he thought that he was going to get these insanely prolific egg layers out of the first flock. And what he found actually is that over time, even not even that much time, what he found is that the chickens, exactly what opposite of what he expected, happened. Meaning it was the least prolific egg layers became the most prolific. And it's because when you group these super alpha oriented chickens together, they begin to peck at each other. And that's where that euphemism, the pecking order, comes from. And when you see pictures of these things in the experiment, they have very few feathers. There's little dots of blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And you can see there's no way that you could ever lay an egg if you're constantly getting pecked and you're just completely stressed.
Yeah.
So that was the story. And that's the story that I tell sales folks as we're onboarding, and I retell it periodically. And the reason it's really important is because what happens is salespeople left it unchecked. If you don't, like, hey, we understand you're all alpha, you're super aggressive, you try really hard. If you don't have these very simple, like, hey, here's how we want to operate as human beings and treat everyone in our company, customer success, implementation, pro serve, the finance team, the support team, as our customer. That's what we want to treat them like. You don't want to be overly aggressive. Like under quota pressure with a couple days left in the quarter, believe me, you don't stop working till you hit the number. And when you need something done right away, like
you got to get it done. That's
you're going to try to get it done.
Yeah.
And you're under pressure. And if you let your nature get the better of you as a salesperson, it can feel absolutely horrible to the rest of the company. So I just try to call that out.
Yeah.
Like, look, who do you want to be in these times of pressure? Don't be a super chicken. Your job is to not create pressure in other teams. It's to alleviate it because they're going to be much more likely to help you. So focus on the end result we want, which is to hit our numbers, but do it in a classy way.
Yeah. Well, you're also giving them like a narrative. I mean, what I'm hearing from that is you're very clearly setting like the norms of how you operate. And you also have the authority and credibility to be like, okay, trust this guy because like he's been at these like places and he's, you know, who he is. So like, all right, I'll play by this. And if it doesn't work, I won't do it, but most likely it will. So there's already like, I feel like your authority there allows you to do that probably. And just say like, this is how we do things here and this works, right? And it's going to feel weird probably if you've not come from and just like,
That environment.
This is going to be weird for you, but like, let's give it a go and let's probably figure it out as we have it. And then the other thing I'm hearing is like, you are stepping back and look at the whole system, not just the sales team, right? You're like, how do we fit in this much larger system? And we have a clear, and you've talked a lot about purpose and alignment, all the things, but it seems like you're helping them. People are just bad at seeing themselves in general. So you're like stepping back and helping them basically raise awareness and consciousness of where they fit here. And then highlighting that like connection and cohesion really matter to win, to get these goals. And we're going to win as a whole company, not as just a sales team. So like, don't screw it up for us here just because you're like a little pissed off. Cause like it's the end of the, you know, quarter.
Exactly. And back to that little, I mean, now we're kind of getting into the elephant thing. Like, again, I heard this story a long time ago. I can't remember where. But it's really hard to see the whole elephant when you're touching the elephant.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what, you know, being in a function can be like if you're the head of sales and you identify.
Yeah.
I'm the head of sales. I'm responsible for expansion, renewals, growth, et cetera. Your hand is still on the elephant.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for you to see the whole elephant when you're touching the elephant. So, you know, that exercise of taking yourself back, like, okay, cool. What's really important to the company? Because your job, your meta job is not to help you win. It's to help your company win. And what, you know, like, what does that mean?
Yeah. What is the mission? Why are we actually here?
Right. Yes. And if you start viewing your role a little too narrowly, you can fall in the trap of, oh, yeah, we hit our numbers. But guess what? We sold accounts outside of our ideal customer profile. We'll find out 8 months from now that they're much more likely to churn. Our software has bundled with white glove service. Why are we selling SMBs? We can't service those profitably. So it begins to make more sense, I believe, through these frameworks.
And I imagine that's where data comes in too, because you have the data to be like, this doesn't work. You know, like you're not a startup early stage. Like for us, we're still like learning, right? And we're like getting the data as we go, but you have the numbers to be like, we know this works here. Don't like mess it. Another thing you're talking about, we train coaches on it, but leaders do, is this idea of the helicopter. Are you teaching people to like reflect on themselves? Are you bringing the helicopter down to really look at the ground or what's going on like on the team? But you also got to like pull it back up and look at the whole land to see where you are and where you're fitting in. Is it working? You're going in the right direction. And you have to have the super skill of toggling between both to really understand like where you are and where you're going.
Exactly. And it's way easier to connect with people on a personal basis when you're on the same ground, right? Yeah. And then to your point, in a board meeting, are you thinking strategically and you have an offsite and your gift, you know, you have this opportunity or gift to step out of the day-to-day role and kind of think about the future. Yeah, then, you know, there's a different altitude associated with that. But I would say to get extraordinary results, you got to get into these details very, very deeply.
Yeah. Yeah, like tie it to, I imagine, like what, like outcomes. What are you doing? How are these behaviors tied to outcome? And then having the data to actually like chat, like, is it working? As we kind of close, is there anything I didn't ask you, Mark, or anything you you know, just the people listening or operators are trying to figure out how to build strong teams, whether they're sales or otherwise, right? Like any words of wisdom, any great books, any podcasts, anything that you think would be particularly helpful?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just promote the couple that I mentioned. If you're really trying to understand your business and just get good at understanding businesses in general, but once you understand your own, it becomes easier to understand others because you have a lens from which you view.
Yeah.
I would read Playing to Win. I think it's the very best at helping you really articulate your own. And then once you do that, I'll just give an example. So now that I've been at this for quite a long time, when I'm viewing another business, and it doesn't matter what business it is, Coca-Cola, AT&T, Boeing, doesn't really matter. I dumped all of my frameworks, like I use the $20 version of ChatGPT-5, and I dump all those into long-term memory. And so when I'm trying to understand another business, I can simply use my voice and say, pull out my framework for AJ Laffey and that work, and Roger L. Martin and that work for Playing to Win, put it in my framework for that, and help me understand their cascade of choices. Mm. Mine, the last several 10Ks, here's three links to the most recent earning call transcripts. And then this thing that it spits out for me to immediately grok a business in a very deep way with 10 minutes of effort. Like, these are the little tricks that I would teach people. So I'm a big believer of like, hey, find what strategy resonates with you. And there's a bunch of different kinds. I like, the Roger L. Martin and AJ Laffey one, but I've read all of them.
Yeah. I can tell. I'm like, you must read. I thought I read a lot, but you read a lot.
Yeah. And then make it your own and then begin to use the tools that these large language models have given us. And you can spit out very high quality strategic work where you're the editor as opposed to the constant, thinker. It's truly saved me dozens of, I probably saved me at least 10 hours a week or more.
Totally. Yeah, I was like, I can tell you about this offline, but I'll just give you the high level. Yeah, we're building out the platform in a much bigger way on the group side right now. And it's basically Harvard gave us a product person. It's been incredible to just have this come together. But it's basically just taking all this stuff and using AI to look at the data and sort it through basically like a group psychology, team psychology lens, and give people that data in real time to kind of do what you're doing. It's like, here's the way we think about this as sort of team psychologists, and then help people, let's assess like personality and functioning, how's this coming together, and then help people understand themselves in a deeper way. So basically I get what you're saying. We're just applying it to team dynamics. You're doing it for like understanding other businesses.
For sure. Yeah, and I think there's this massive unlock. I mean, retrieval augmented generation or like RAG engines allows you to basically make it yours, right? So having multiple people take assessments, whether it's a Big Five or whatever, and then mash those together for working styles and whatever. Like, yeah, what a fun thing to... That used to be hard. It's not that hard.
Yeah, we took a whole bunch of assessments and research, built our own assessment, deliver individual reports, team reports, and then filter it through our platform to coach people in real time, really with a focus on cohesion, right? So helping leaders coach better. You're natural at this, but most people aren't. So how do you like put some guardrails on the average IC who's risen to leadership? And then if you and I are going to be, we're on a team, how using like an agentic team psychologist to help me be prepared to have the best meeting for you based on how you're feeling, what you've reported, and who your personality, who you are as a human. Anyway, I'll pick your brain about that another time, but thank you so much, Mark. You are so fun and just so appreciate you giving up your time and sharing all of this with me and people listening.
You're welcome, and great seeing you again, and happy World Kindness Day.
Happy World Kindness Day and happy Blue Sweater Day.
Exactly. Okay, take care, Bobby.